Okay. Again, Rav Kook's religious Zionism is much deeper than most people think, and a lot more beautiful as well. And it goes back to 3,700 years, and is considerably different from French or American or Italian nationalism or patriotism. Okay, Bereshit Mata'o Shel Ha'am Hazeh Asher Yada Likro B'Shem HaRayon Elohi HaBarur VaTahor. And we won't go through, read it again. God revealed, even in the world of paganism, his desire to set up a great nation, Asher Yishmur Derech Hashem La'asot Tzedakah U'Mishpat. Quote from Sefer Bereshit, that Hashem wanted to bring justice and morality to the world. Why does it have to be through a nation? That's exactly our topic. And what was the problem in the world? Now, I suggest the next couple of minutes you write down, mamash, like on the board, like a mathematic equation, so that way it'll be much easier to remember. Philosophy, you'll see, is very similar to mathematics. If there are two gods, if there are two or four or 10 or 100 gods, inevitably, even if you never learned a little Greek mythology, what are the gods doing all day? They don't just hang out. The gods are always fighting with each other. That is how primitive man understood there are conflicting powers. There is the power of strength, and there is the power of beauty. There is the power of the day and the power of the night. Now, if there are two gods, and how kal v'chomer if there are 10, we now understand Greek mythology that inevitably they fight, because everybody wants to be number one, and that is how primitive man came up with this idea of paganism. Now, super important point. Hevra, all religions that we know of today in the world have this concept of imitating God, or what's called in Latin, anybody remember? Aiden. Imitatio Dei. Remember this term, because this will help us understand a lot about Judaism. We also imitate our God. Mahu Rachum, Afatatia Rachum. God is merciful. We should try and be merciful. God created the worlds. First thing he told Adam and Chava, Pruur Vu. You also have children. You create worlds also. God rests on Shabbat. Imitatio Dei. We imitate God. We also rest on Shabbat. The Torah is a hadracha, a booklet, how to imitate God. Now, in paganism, they also imitate their gods. But in paganism, the gods are violent. And if so, imitatio Dei, what's going to be the next ramification of that? Man also. Me too. Man can be violent. The gods are violent. And now we're beginning to understand how paganism and polytheism, having several gods, inevitably led to immorality. On the other hand, comes Avraham Avinu down to the world with this concept of one God. Now, even if you don't believe in that one God, inevitably, if there is one God, he doesn't fight with anybody. He created everyone. He created all the powers. If so, this one God is a God of peace. And that is why monotheism believes in to be Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. One of the names of God is in fact Shalom. Right? Do you people know the Mishnah Berurah brings that down, Lehalacha? You can't say Shalom in the bathroom. Right? If you're in a public bathroom and you see somebody, could say Boker Tov. You even ask the question, what if your husband or brother's name is Shalom? You can't call his name in the bathroom, because that is one of God's names. Okay? One God is a God of peace. Nobody fights with him. He doesn't fight with anybody. What's the next ramification, obviously? Sorry? Exactly. Imitatio Dei. Me too. But our imitatio Dei is peaceful. We yearn for peace. We believe in Mashiach. We believe in Geula. We believe that peace is the way of running the world. Girls, today everybody knows because the world has matured. Remember this arrow? The world is constantly maturing. And mankind has matured and realized that it's better not just to punch people out. And you don't rate a person just by the size of his muscles. But it's better to sit down if you have a disagreement to talk about things. That is part of the maturing of the individual and also the maturing of mankind. Okay? So, this is part of the maturing of mankind. This is point number one. Point number two is another aspect. If there are two gods, and Kal v'chomer if there are 10 or 100, what are those gods, aside from fighting? When does man come across? You know what, let's start taking a step earlier. What does it infer about each of those gods, if there are two, or five, or 10? Yeah. Exactly. Each one, by definition, by the way, notice, sometimes we draw an arrow as a ramification, sometimes we draw equals. By definition, each one of them lacks something, right? The god of beauty lacks strength. The god of strength lacks beauty. Everyone has their turf, okay? Now, in paganism, if each god lacks something, even if you never learned mythology, but Kal v'chomer if you did learn mythology, what are those gods going to try and do about their lacking? If you lack something, you try and take it. You try and make it up. How much more so the gods who have these strong powers, they are always trying to take and make up, fill in that which they lack. In other words, in paganism, by definition, well, actually it's a ramification, the gods are takers. And that's man's relationship with God in paganism. By the way, a lot of what we're learning today is based on anthropologists. Those people who go to backward tribes, today I think they found all of them, but 30, 40, 50 years ago, they would find these backward tribes in Africa or Australia, and that was how they would try and understand how primitive man worked. Now, primitive man, if they have these gods who are takers, say God is withholding rain. So man does not like feeling impotent. He has an ego. We want to do something about it. So we have to do something. So in certain places they came up with a ring dance, right? You all heard of that. The most common thing was sacrifices. What is the idea of a sacrifice? It's to pacify the gods. Listen, you're not giving me rain. Can you at least take this bribe and give me rain? The same thing every time primitive man had a crisis. Right? If Chas v'Shalom, a man's son or daughter drowned, they would explain that Poseidon, remember him? The god of water, right? You see the ocean, you see these waves. He took my son or my daughter because he wanted my son as a servant, or he saw my daughter as beautiful and he desired her. The gods are always taking, right? If a man's field burned down, he explained that Pyro, right, the god of fire, was hungry, and he took my wheat. So primitive man, we'll just finish the equation, primitive man gave sacrifices in order to pacify the gods. In other words, if the gods are takers, I got to do something about it. So man came up with this idea of sacrifices. What's the end of the equation? You could already take an educated guess. If the gods are takers, so? Me too. Man also, society is going to be takers, are going to be violent and immoral. On the other hand, again, we'll just finish the equation. Write down your comments so you don't forget. If there is one god, by definition, he is moral. And it enables and it brings us to imitatio Dei of morality. Why? Because if there is one God, by definition, somebody want to try and complete it? He's perfect. One God by definition, again, whether you believe in him or not, if there is one God, he is perfect. If he's perfect, he doesn't need to take anything. He's not a taker. So what does he do all day? He's a giver. Imitati Odei. Me too. Monotheism says we also should be givers. And Chevra, you got to remember, we grew up in a society over here. If we were around 5,000 years ago, the norm was to be a taker. The norm was to be a chauvinist. The norm was to be a bully. Whoever could be a bully, you know, he would be, try and beat up as many people and take things as possible. Thank God, because of monotheism, little by little, the world is maturing. Yeah. Your name again, Leah?
Yeah. I understand the first one, but for the second one, first of all, we are taking people, we're going to put on this earth with other people to take gifts with them. And also, what's the difference between what you said about, like, the God, like, taking, like, your field and stuff, and giving carbonos, and believing that God takes things as a kapara?
Okay, very important point. Remind me to get back to the second point, to the first point, because the second is much more basic. Chevra, in monotheism, the entire Torah and every single mitzvah, if God is perfect, that means that it's not for him. He doesn't need anything. But the mitzvot and the korbanot are for us. And then you have to learn, mitzvah by mitzvah, why does korbanot, what does the word korban literally mean? What's the shoresh? Karov. To become close to God. We want to become close to God, because when you give a gift, say you crochet your boyfriend a kippah, that brings you closer to him. He buys you flowers, that brings him closer to you. Okay? So the korbanot are for us. All mitzvot are for us. God is perfect. He doesn't need anything. What was the first comment you made?
We are selfish beings.
God created us in a way that we are not God. And imitatio dei, we are called tselem elokim, right? The word tselem is from the word tsel. Tsel is a shadow. Right? You see my shadow? My shadow is not me, but it imitates me. So too, we are not God, but we all have a godly spark that we can imitate God. Okay? It's a similar relationship. Let's go on. Point number three. What happens on Judgment Day? In paganism, if there are two judges, or 5 or 10 or 100 judges, what does that mean by definition? There is no one objective truth. In paganism, everybody has their own truth. Why? Well, we know because it was man who invented the gods. When you invent a god, you portray on the god all of the things that you would want and all the shortcomings that you have. So if there are two judges, there is no one objective truth. There is no one objective morality. Hevra, what's going to happen in a world where there is no objective truth? There is no objective morality. What's going to happen? Sorry? Man is going to... We're going to have anarchy. Chaos. Because everyone is going to justify that which their heart desires, right? Now, you can... If there's no one objective truth, you can justify it all. You can justify murder. Right? Who is to say that thou shalt not kill? Right? One person says it's moral to kill poisonous snakes. Another person says it's moral to kill Jews. Everyone has their own morality. But comes Avraham Avinu 3,700 years ago and says, no, there is one judge. If there is one judge, that means that there is one objective truth. There is one objective morality. In other words, you cannot just justify anything that you want. There is order. There is Judgment Day. There is Yom Kippur. There is heaven. There is hell. There is accountability. Yeah, Ayala.
In paganism, did they think that the two gods work together at all, or they're just against each other?
No, sometimes they made coalitions. Right? If there are 10 gods, you might have a coalition of 3 ganging up against 1. It's like little children. Because again, paganism is a pretty primitive way of looking at the world. It's just like children gang up. You know, he's stronger than me, and he's stronger than him, but you and me together, like you say, we can gang up, and together we can make a coalition. It's like a kindergarten. Yeah. Fantastic. For man, that's the same answer to what I said before to Leah. We are not God, but we have a big advantage that God gave us the Torah. God gave us Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tinav, Lo Tignov. These 613 mitzvot, these are objectively true. Somebody can say, well, I don't agree with him. Tough luck. You know, there is one judge, there's one objective truth. Right? Yeah.
How is like anything that's going on today any different than like straight out paganism? Because a lot of the things that like you're saying really remind me of things that go on today. Like there's a whole movement called Create Your Own Truth.
Right.
Like it's not like it just it, like you're saying there's one objective truth, your truth or justifying like pedophilia based on like their sexuality. But there's one objective truth in that same
right. Problem. Okay. So here also, if you don't have a God, you're going to justify everything. And you'll find people justifying pedophilia and justifying murder and justifying... That's the problem if you don't have God. If you have God, those people are not religious people. If they're Christian. Say they're... If a religious Christian, he believes in the Ten Commandments. Right? There is a judge. There is an objective truth. Right?
They're atheists. They're not pagans.
But, let's just be honest... Today, the world has already been built upon 3,700 years of monotheism. Today, even those who create their own truth, ask them, is it moral to kill? They'll admit no. 3,700 years ago, in the time of Hammurabi, the Codex of Hammurabi, it was legitimate to kill. There's mankind, Baruch Hashem, because of morality, because of monotheism, has brought morality to the world. Okay, let's go on. So the first point, yeah. Nachum, there's no judgment day.
So do they think about the two gods like fighting about their judgment or not?
I'm not so bucky in I'm not a paganist, sorry. I don't know the answer to that question. But what's important to us, the first and foremost goal of Am Yisrael. Why did God begin Avram and the Jewish people? It was really two goals. The two goals for which Am Yisrael was brought to the world is to bring monotheism to the world and inevitably to bring morality to the world. Maybe I'll clarify just a little more. I'll simplify it a little more. Only after you have the first 5 commandments of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yelecha Elohim Acherim, only afterwards could you command Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tinaf, Lo Tignov, the second 5 commandments. Okay? That's why this precedes that. Or maybe I'll simplify it a drop more. Paganism is not just a mathematical problem. Is there one God, 2 gods, 5, or 10? It is a moral problem. Did y'all catch that? Paganism is not a mathematical problem. How many gods? It is a moral problem. And now you understand why even though the Torah is super tolerant towards just about everything, not towards paganism. Paganism, no. Don't even start with paganism. Zero tolerance toward paganism, because zero, as soon as you begin paganism, then you have a problem of immorality. Man is going to be eating man. You want to say something? Yeah. That's the first Rashi in the Torah. Now, always when you learn Midrash, Midrash has a very set agenda. And Chazal, and Rashi brings down another Midrash that says that the world was created for Am Yisrael.
Yeah.
And for Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
And there's another Midrash which Rashi brings down that it was given for Torah. Torah is also called Reshit.
Right.
It's on the same Rashi.
Yeah.
So, is it, so, somebody who's broader, and that's really what you should be doing at your age, say, okay, Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Torat Yisrael, it's really all one thing. Okay? In elementary school, kids usually aren't so complex, and they just first teach this Rashi, then they teach that Rashi, but this is the stage where you should all be at, pulling it all together. Chevra, paragraph bet. Zoya she'ifa, this desire of God to bring more reality to the world, to bring monotheism to the world, to help the world mature to a higher level, this desire, sheba mikoach ha'kara ha'brura v'aza, stems from a clear understanding, a strong understanding, v'atviyah musarit ha'kolelet v'arama, and man's basic conscience that we were all created with. We all have a conscience. And that's why it wasn't all that difficult for mankind eventually to accept this concept of monotheism and morality. The goal of Am Yisrael is to bring all of mankind out of their terrible suffering. Tzarot ruchaniyot v'chomriyot. Mankind was suffering spiritually. They were suffering physically, materialistically. Again, when a world is based on being a bully, when you go to sleep at night, you're not sure whether your sheep are going to be there in the morning. Right? Everything is based on violence. The king is the biggest bully, so he's happy. Everyone else is not happy campers. The world was a miserable place. La Vienna l'chaye chofesh mle'e hod ve'eden. The goal of Am Yisrael, notice, Chevra, the goal of Am Yisrael is not Am Yisrael. You know, a lot of times we make a mistake because we learn the Tanakh and we see that, yeah, we are the heroes of the Tanakh, we're the chosen people. Girls, 99.8% of the world is not Jewish. 99.8% of the world is not Jewish. That also is super important to God. But how is Hashem going to bring monotheism and morality to mankind to make the world a better place, a world mele'e hod ve'eden? Eden, what does Eden mean? Eden is sweetness, pleasure. Hashem wants to make the world a better, nicer place to live. To bring success to all of mankind. Chevra, when Avram Avinu was told, leave your land, your father's home, your nation, go to the land of Israel, and I will make you into a great nation. We'll talk soon about why it does have to be great and why it does have to be a nation. But first of all, Hashem continues. And that's what Rukh is talking about here. V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot ha'adama. Through you, through Am Yisrael, is going to come blessing to all of mankind. Let's leave Rashi. How is Rav Kook explaining that pasuk, the pshat of that pasuk? Yeah? Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh. That's a pasuk. Yeah. Yeah. But how are we going to do it? That's really the real answer to your question is in the next paragraph. Okay, we'll see that in a minute. But first of all, Chevra, why is this so important? Because as soon as people talk about patriotism or nationalism, people are scared of racism. Right? When you hear Aryan supremacy, right, that the Germans thought that they're supreme, where, you know, they're talking now about Trump and white supremacy, and he didn't talk enough against it. The problem with that is the most nationalistic, patriotic Americans are in the American Nationalist Party, which is a code name for the Ku Klux Klan. They don't like blacks, they don't like Jews, they don't like Hispanics, they don't like anybody who's not them. And the same thing if you go to France, anybody who's been in France knows that the French are super patriotic. Anybody from Canada here in Montreal? Even in Montreal, which is French-Canadian, they have laws that on signs in stores, the French letters have to be, I think it's twice as large as the English letters. In France, in a lot of places, you're not allowed to have any other language aside from French, French, French. They're very patriotic. But everybody knows the more patriotic a Frenchman is, the more he hates the English. They've been at each other for centuries. And vice versa. The more patriotic an Englishman is, he hates the French. And the more patriotic a German is, he hates everyone. You know, get out of the way. And here we have a very important point. That Zionism, or Jewish patriotism, does not lead to racism. It does not lead to war. Why? Did everyone see? How does Rav Kook, everybody ask when they're in high school, so what's the difference between the Jewish concept of the chosen people and the Aryan German concept that they are supreme? How does Rav Kook answer that? Louder? Right. Our whole goal is not only to impact, but to bring betterness to. We want to bring morality to the world. We don't want there to be wars. Again, in most other patriotism, patriotism is dangerous. Comes Jewish patriotism and says, we want to bring morality and monotheism to the world. We want to make the world a better place. V'nivrechu v'cha kol mishpachot adama. Rav Kook is explaining, Am Yisrael is going to bring bracha, also materialistically and also spiritually. Because when the world is cooperating and we are givers and we want peace, then the world economy is going to benefit. By the way, modern mankind knows that. Today, mankind knows that if it's good in Russia, it's going to be good in America. If it's good in America, it's good for the Russians. This is part of the maturing of and the unity and the godliness of the world. But in the time of Avraham Avinu, this was a new concept. A nationalism which is for the sake of universalism, for the sake of bringing goodness to the world. Also spiritually, and also materialistically, economically. Now we get to the punchline, the answer to Eidan's question. Paragraph Gimel. Limlo'a shel she'ifa zu. In order to fulfill this desire, that Hashem wants to bring morality to the world. He wants to bring monotheism to the world. He wants to make the world a better place. It has to be done. How does he do it? Davka, tzarich davka shetzibur ze yebal medina politit, v'sociálit, v'chisei mamlacha le'umit, b'roma tarbut anoshit. Rav Kook is saying Hashem decided all the way back in Sefer Breshit that it has to be done through a nation. Zionism. We need a Jewish state with Jewish politics and Jewish culture and a Jewish army. And that is what is going to bring monotheism and morality to the world. Biroma tarbut enoshit, at the peak of human culture. Chevra, this is a very important point. Because you will not hear Reb Moshe Feinstein or the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or even Rav Soloveitchik, who was relatively open, you will not hear them praise culture, theater, literature, movies. Why is it so important to Rav Kook? Let's see in Source 2 where he elaborates. In Source 2 in Ikve Hatzon, page Kuf Lamed Chet, Rav Kook explains, as he's talking about what is Kibbutz Galiot about. When all the Jews come back to the land of Israel, and by the way, statistically, that's what's happening, right? Most of the Jews from Yemen and Morocco and Algeria and Russia and Ethiopia and Germany and really everywhere except for America, most of the Jews are already here. If so, what is Kibbutz Galiot? As, at that point, when all the Jews come home to Israel, Tiyashpa'a kulturit amitit l'Israel ba'olam, there will be a true cultural influence of Israel on the world. She'am chashuv mashpia lo rak bifrat nifrad mimenu, because great nations, superpowers, they don't just influence on this detail or that detail. Ki im b'chol atzmiyuto, in everything that they do, they influence. Chevra, let's start with a microcosm. Hurry back. You won't want to miss the punchline.
Oh, sorry.
It's your just.
Can you tell me the punchline over
then? Okay. Chevra, let's start with the microcosm. We'll be mentioning a lot. It's important philosophy. If you want to understand the development of the macrocosm, mankind, it's good to look at the microcosm, at the maturing of the individual, and also vice versa. Let's start now with the individual, because we want to understand what nationalism is about. One day, about 10 years ago, my 9-year-old son, Eliezer, comes to my wife and says, Ima, I'd like you please to just buy cornflakes. Now, why is that significant? In many families, like in our family, there's a constant struggle between parents and children what cereals to buy. Children like all of these artificial color, artificial sweeteners, right? And parents like boring, healthy cereals, like cornflakes. And here, my son is confusing my wife, says, Ima, I just want you to buy cornflakes. She doesn't understand until she goes to the makolet. There on the shelf, she sees that Omri Kaspi, the star of Israel basketball, says he eats Telma cornflakes. So my son wants to eat Telma cornflakes. Chevra, why does that work? Why do companies pay billions to athletes, movie stars, models? Throughout the world, they pay billions of dollars every year to have them endorse their topic. Why? Why does it work? Because they influence. Chevra, imitatio dei. People like to imitate their idols. On my high school basketball team, I wore number 17 because my hero, John Havlicek, wore number 17. Okay? Now, it's the same thing also with nations. Nations also like to imitate the superpowers. Now, when I was your age, there were two superpowers in the world. There was America, and half the world was watching American movies and wearing American fashions and eating American food and listening to American music. On the other hand, the other half of the world was copying the Soviet Union. Communist Russia was a superpower.
When you were a kid, Communist Russia was a superpower?
Yeah, until 80. I must be older than I look. Of course. Communist Russia was a superpower until 1989, until Tavshin Memtet, and then suddenly it collapsed. Chevra, half the world was watching Soviet movies, wearing Soviet fashions, listening to Soviet music. Since 1989, since
the
fall.
The Russian Revolution.
No.
You weren't alive in the
80s. Correct. Not that old. Correct. You all heard of the Glasnost in 1989, where suddenly Soviet Russia collapsed. That's what brought 1.2 million Jews on Aliyah. And today there's only one superpower in the world. Today everyone is watching American movies and wearing American fashions. Even France, that we mentioned before, who hates Western culture, even they have Euro Disney, even they have McDonald's. Because today, America's, everybody comes, just like my son wants to imitate his basketball hero, so too the world, the nations, like to copy the superpower. Now, that would be good to the extent that American culture is good. The problem is, if the movie's coming out of Hollywood, if the movie's coming out of Hollywood are to a large extent based on violence, sex, what's called in Hebrew Gilui Arayot and Shfichut Damim, right? Those are problematic ideals. And that's what's influencing the world. Imagine what is going to be when, what is Kibbutz Galiot? Chevra, what's taking place in the world? Can you imagine if you could bring all of the Jewish doctors into one country, all the Jewish doctors from America, England, France, Austria, all to one country? Can you imagine bringing all of the Jewish movie stars, all of the Jewish musicians, all the Simons and Garfunkels and Bob Dylans and Barbara Streisands, bringing all of them into one country? Right? Bring all of the Jewish movie producers, all of the Spielbergs, and Coen Brothers and Warner Brothers, Paramount Picture, all of these Jewish, all of them will not be in Hollywood, but they will be in Yerushalayim. That's what's happening. Chevra, can you imagine bringing all of the Jewish Nobel Prize winners into one country? I have an article here, anybody wants to see afterwards, about Jewish Nobel Prize winners. By the way, the last 2 weeks they started giving out Nobel Prize prizes again. I think out of the 6 Nobel Prize winners, 2 were Jewish. Now, Chevra, Jews, we mentioned before, comprise 0.2% of mankind. But we have won 22% of the Nobel Prizes. Girls, you don't have to be a statistician to realize that we have won 100%, not 100%, 100 times logic. Girls, imagine bringing all of the Jewish Nobel Prize winners from Russia and America and South America all to one country. Chevra, Israel is going to be a super cultural influence. And just like America does not coerce, America doesn't force anybody to copy American culture, but people want to do it because they want to copy the leader. And that's what Imitatio Dei is about. So Am Yisrael, Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, you have to leave your nation, set up a new nation in Eretz Yisrael with the state of Israel, which has culture, which has sports teams, which has army, to bring godliness, i.e., to bring morality into every aspect of life, and in doing so, continue to raise mankind to become a more moral and better place. Chevra, how many of you, you've all heard of Steven Spielberg, right? Without a doubt, the number one movie director in the world. And he's been so for the last 50 years. He's not young. How many of you have seen Schindler's List? He had a movie about the Holocaust. How many of you have heard about Schindler's List? Okay, you've all heard about Schindler's List. Chevra, when Schindler's List came out, it did more to educate the world about the Holocaust than all of the documentaries and museums put together. Why did Schindler's List shock the world? Because the average Gentile in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, he's not going to go to a Holocaust museum in Washington, D.C. He doesn't watch educational television. He's not going to, who cares about the Holocaust? But he watches movies. Everybody watches movies. And when it's a good movie, and Spielberg produces good movies, he's going to watch it. And the same thing, imagine, Rav Kook isn't naive enough to say that it's going to happen tomorrow, right? It's a process, just like everything else in the world is a process. There was the first Aliyah, and the second Aliyah, and the third Aliyah, the Aliyah before the Holocaust, Aliyah after the Holocaust, the Aliyah of the Sephardic countries, the Aliyah of Russia and Ethiopia. It's a long process. But just put one and one together. Given number one is that the Jewish people are coming home. That's a historic given. Given number two, the Jewish people have a disproportionately strong influence on human culture. Which means that I'm not sure that Spielberg is going to be making his movies from Yerushalayim, but when his grandson is going to be making the world's movies, not from Hollywood, but from Yerushalayim, and not from the ideals of and priorities of Hollywood, but according to the ideas and the priorities of Yerushalayim, that is what the Tanakh is talking about. Chevra, when the Tanakh says that there is this chosen nation, that's us, who's going to bring God and morality to the world and to make the world a better place, it has to be through a nation. It has to be through the state of Israel. Why? Religions don't participate in the Olympics. Religions don't participate in the Emmy Awards. Religions don't have fashions. But when the Jewish, you know what? Take the Jewish clothes designers of the world. When all of the grandchildren of Sassoon, Calvin Klein, Ralph Lauren, Levi Strauss, they're all Jewish. All of their grandchildren will continue designing clothing, but from Yerushalayim. Can you imagine what's going to be when the world's clothing is according to the ideology of morality? Not to attract somebody else's husband, but to be attractive to your own husband. And the movies coming out of Yerushalayim, they're going to be the best movies in the world. Everyone's going to want to watch them. But their educational message is don't cheat on your spouse, but family is important. This is what's going to bring morality to the world. I'll just give you an example. It's a small example. European champion of judo in her weight. Her name a couple years ago, 3-4 years ago, was Yardin Jerby. Yardin Jerby, when she won the finals, and the final European is on international television, she got her opponent into a hold where you're basically choking them. And it's allowed. And her opponent did not have oxygen going to her head, and she fainted. And that's how Yardin Jerby, and it was 100% legal, that's what everybody tries to do, that is how she won the European Championship. Now, instead of jumping for joy, like most athletes would do, and it's natural, you're working your whole life, you've been working for the last 15 years, day and night, to get to the European Championship, and you finally win it, she doesn't jump for joy. She tries waking up her opponent. That is a Kiddush Hashem. Now, can you imagine if something like that happens on the International Olympics and the finals of basketball, where it's not 1 million people watching, but 3 million people watching? Can you imagine a decision, right, where the ball rolls out of bounds, and there's an Israeli and American athlete, they jump for the ball, and the whole world is waiting for the referee's decision. Who touched the ball last? And the referee blows his whistle, and he decides the American touched the ball last. It's Israeli ball. 1 second left. We're up by 1 point. That's the gold medal. And then the Israeli basketball player comes over to the referee on international television, and he says, I have to tell the truth. I touched the ball last. Give the ball to the Americans. Give them another chance. And as he runs back to play defense, the world is in shock. Because in one sentence on international television, that Israeli basketball player raised the question, who said that winning is more important than telling the truth? Maybe telling the truth is more important than winning. That you can only do when you are the ones making the movies and writing the songs and designing the fashions. And that is why we need Am Yisrael as a Jewish nation, not a Jewish religion, on center stage, influencing the world peacefully, nicely. We don't force ourselves on anybody, but just like all the Spielbergs and Simons and Garfunkels are influencing the world out of Hollywood, their grandchildren will be influencing the world out of Yerushalayim. And what Rav Kook is basically simply doing is showing that the Tanakh is not naive. Leah, did you see that? The Tanakh is not for children. The Tanakh is coming true in the 21st century. And morality and monotheism, we have already succeeded to a large extent, but there still is a lot of more work to do. Any questions or comments? So I now hopefully understand Zionism, religious Zionism, on a much higher level. It's not just we like the flag, we like the language. It is, hey, these morality and monotheism are the two most important concepts in the entire world. We'll see you next week. We'll continue next week.